that I may have met him, possibly what it might have been in Cleveland.
I had no contacts with Russia. I've never been to Russia. I never spoke to any Russians. I don't know any Russians.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
I don't know about it. I haven't seen it.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. After months of questions over Russia's involvement in the 2016 election and its ties to the Trump campaign, hearings began today on Capitol Hill to try to get some answers, with FBI Director James Comey and NSA Director Mike Rogers called to testify. Here's Comey confirming the FBI is investigating the Trump campaign.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts.
And just a little later, Comey said there is no evidence that the previous administration wiretapped then-candidate Trump, as the president has repeatedly claimed.
So no individual in the United States can direct electronic surveillance of anyone. It has to go through an application process, ask a judge. The judge can then make the order.
So President Obama could not unilaterally order a wiretap of anyone?
No president could.
Natalie Andrews is the social media editor and congressional reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She joins me now to explain what the intelligence community actually revealed to the public today. Natalie Andrews, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
Natalie, we heard Comey say that the FBI is actively investigating Russian hacks and any connection to the Trump campaign. What did we learn today about this investigation?
I mean, that's huge news to even have the confirmation that there is an investigation going on, and to have Director Comey on the Hill talking about that in the open and also saying, you know, there could possibly be a connection with the Trump campaign. Even when Jeff Sessions recused himself a few weeks ago, he said, I'm recusing myself, but there may or may not be an investigation. And now we have that confirmation, right? So that's like a big, big things. Even if, you know, James Comey's declining to answer a lot of specific questions that might be asked, these are steps in an investigation.
Steps. Okay. So Comey and Rogers were asked repeatedly about the claims of wiretapping by President Obama. What were they willing to tell the public about them?
I mean, they've been saying repeatedly over and over, you know, that James Comey said a president cannot just unilaterally ask for something to be wiretapped. So, which really goes to Donald Trump's tweet saying, you know, almost accusing President Obama of like a Watergate-like crime to have Trump Tower wiretapped, to have then James Comey say, nope, a president cannot unilaterally have something wiretapped. That's not how it works. I mean, he's just kind of been answering things very procedurally. But even saying those things procedurally really goes against Donald Trump's accusations. And really steps things back and says, look, that couldn't have happened.
Republicans on the committee were less concerned about some of the leaks themselves that have been coming out of these agencies. And it seems more concerned about how these leaks have come to be.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie, is there a genuine culture of leaking throughout the intelligence agencies? And if so, how concerned should we be?
Well, I think I believe it was James Comey who said, in the past few weeks, there certainly seems to be more leaks that have happened. And they said they're looking into that. Mike Rogers almost preemptively answered one of the questions by saying, you know, we only are giving this information to people that are supposed to be seeing it. And they're really keeping that list tight. But there has been some frustration, and when there is frustration, there can be leaking that happens when people don't feel like the organization is running how they want it to be. That's usually when we see leaks or whistleblowing. It's interesting to hear them say there has been more leaks in the past little while, because it certainly seems to be frustrating Donald Trump if you read his Twitter feed.
Right. So where does this go from here? This is just the first of many hearings, right?
Yes, the Senate has scheduled a hearing, so we will see a similar hearing on the Senate side. They're also going to have a classified hearing on the House side. In the classified hearing, they'll be able to ask more questions that we don't hear in public. And eventually, both the Senate and the House committees say they want to have reports that come out that say this is our conclusion on this. But I think we're several months away from getting any sort of conclusion out of that.
Okay, Natalie Andrews is the social media editor and congressional reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Natalie, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course.
We turn now to Karun Demirjian. She covers national security and foreign policy for The Washington Post and was previously a Moscow correspondent for the paper. Karun is helping us to answer your questions about the Russian hacks and the people in the Trump campaign that we should be focused on. Karun, let's start with this question from our listener.
Hi, this is Mark, an election judge from Lake County, Illinois. What evidence shows that our voting system was hacked? How does it point to Russian actors? And what was hacked, ostensibly, servers or voting terminals? I'd like to know.
All right, Karun. So what does it mean that Russia hacked our election?
Well, it doesn't mean what your caller was asking about. It does not mean that they got into voting machines or manipulated vote totals or were somehow in the county commission or the state board of elections servers and manipulating the way things showed up or who actually had access to the polls. What it was doing, and this is what the former director of national intelligence said earlier this year, that there were Russian efforts to hack various campaign-related organizations. So it's like the Democratic National Committee, Clinton's campaign director, John Podesta. These are all places where there were hacks that were then the information was released through WikiLeaks, but the intelligence community found that the hacks traced back to Russian hacking, and they believe that it was a combination of hacked information and also the dissemination of that information in a way that is designed to serve as propaganda or political influence. It's a hack of various things that go into how we perceive what's going on in the campaign in the whole campaign period.
And Karun, there are a cast of characters involved here who were in Trump's campaign and have various alleged ties to Russia. We will get to Trump, but first let's begin with Michael Flynn, who up until recently was President Trump's national security advisor. He had to resign because he lied to the administration about his contact with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. What do we know about Flynn and Russia?
Well, the episode that you started with, the president said that Michael Flynn did not tell the truth about the substance of his meeting with the Russian ambassador Kislyak to the vice president, and thus he had to ask him to resign. Flynn has prior connections to Russia. There's probably a very famous photo of him sitting at a table with Russian President Vladimir Putin at a dinner for RT. I pause to say the equivalent of Voice of America because it's a lot more intense, I think, and intensely geared. But it's Russian-funded television that's broadcast outside of Russia as well in multiple languages. A lot of it communicates propaganda to the rest of the world. So there's some connections that certainly do precede his tenure in the Trump administration. Going on from there, the other person I feel like we should note at this point, in the same breath as Flynn, just because Flynn did have to resign over these conversations, the other person in the administration that has been shown to have had contacts with Russian officials is Jeff Sessions, who had two meetings with the Russian ambassador as well, which may not have been a big deal had he just disclosed the fact that they happened. But he was asked under oath when he was having his confirmation hearing whether anybody that he knew of in the Trump campaign had had any contacts with Russian officials. And he said no. And he referred to himself saying, you know, some people say I'm a surrogate and I certainly haven't had talks, but he had just a few months before. And so a lot of the questions about these contacts are just, you know, okay, people talk to the Russian ambassador. That's not a weird thing if you live in Washington, D.C. and you're in politics, but why not tell people about it? Why be secretive about it? That's where it gets weird.
And we know that Trump has had various financial dealings with Russia for decades. What do we know about those connections with Russia?
Well, those aren't as concrete, I believe. He has certainly attempted to start businesses in Russia. There is the episode of the beauty pageant that he owned trying to get into Russia. So there have been various attempts to do that. The extent to which he has been successful in those business dealings, less so, I think, than in other places where he's made his mark around the world. There are no Trump hotels right now in Russia. There is no major sort of enterprise there. But he's tried to before, and that has left a trail of, you know, connections through, and you probably recall in the last weeks of the election season that there were various reports about, you know, pinging servers back and forth between Trump Tower and Russia's largest private bank. After the election, there was that 35-page dossier that came out alleging that there might be other financial ties, and that dossier had other salacious details in it as well. I should clarify that that dossier came out of information that a British intelligence official gained from Russian sources from within Russia. So there's certainly a lot of speculation. There's certainly a lot of breadcrumbs. It's not clear exactly whether those just are the scattered refuse of business attempts that he tried that did not go that well, or if that actually is a trail that leads to something, as many of his opponents have alleged, that that's, you know, suspicious enough to say there might be actual real collusion connections here.
And also,
which have not been substantiated yet, I should say.
And now, after the election, has there been any potentially illegal contact that we know of so far?
I mean, that's I'm pausing just because you said potentially illegal contact. You really have to parse through what it is that is a suspect and potentially troublesome here, right? Is it, like I said before, is it strange that somebody who is in high-level politics is going to meet with or talk to the Russian ambassador? No. I mean, full disclosure, as a reporter who was heading to Russia, I've talked to the Russian ambassador twice, once right before I went, once right after I came back. That's a normal thing. The question is, what is the substance of those discussions? And did it get to the point where they were saying, don't worry about the sanctions policy, don't deal with the Obama administration, we'll be in office pretty soon, we'll start negotiating, kind of undercutting the sitting administration, which you don't do. Technically, it's illegal. No one's ever been dragged into court under the Logan Act, which is what makes it illegal. But did it go further than that? And also, the reason that everybody is speculating about what is the substance of these conversations and did it get to the point where it's inappropriate or potentially illegal is that we didn't know that even happened, right? Why not just say, yeah, like as I just did, yeah, I've met the Russian ambassador.
All right. Karun Dimirjian covers national security and foreign policy for The Washington Post, and she was previously a Moscow correspondent for the paper. Karun, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The president was tweeting earlier today about this story, among other things. Before the hearings began, he called the story fake news. And then later during the hearings, he tweeted, quote, the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence electoral process. We should be clear, while Comey and Rogers did say there is no evidence of tampering with voting machines or vote counts, they did say there is reason to believe that Russia did interfere with the presidential campaign. And as we've already reported, the FBI did confirm that they are investigating Russia's involvement and any possible links to the Trump campaign. More on this all week. This is Sarah Gonzalez in for John Hockenberry on The Takeaway. Stay with us.